Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. Well, happy St. Valentine's Day, everyone. This is our Valentine's Day show. So the best way to start is to talk a little bit about the history of St. Valentine's Day. Valentine's Day started in the time of the Roman Empire. In ancient Rome, February 14th was a holiday to honor Juno. Juno was the queen of the Romans' gods and goddesses. The Romans also knew her as the goddess of women and marriage. The lives of young boys and girls were strictly separate. However, one of the customs of the young people was name drawing. On the eve of the festival of Lupercalia, the names of Roman girls were written on slips of paper and placed into a jar. Each young man would draw a girl's name from the jar and would then be partners for the duration of the festival with the girl whom he chose. Sometimes, the pairing of the children lasted an entire year, and often, they would fall in love and would later marry. Under the rule of Emperor Claudius II, Rome was involved in many bloody and unpopular campaigns. Claudius the Cruel was having a difficult time getting soldiers to join his military leagues. He believed that the reason was that Roman men did not want to leave their loves or families. As a result, Claudius canceled all marriages and engagements in Rome. The good Saint Valentine was a priest at Rome in the days of Claudius II. He aided the Christian martyrs and secretly married couples, and for this kind deed, Saint Valentine was apprehended, dragged before the prefect of Rome, who condemned him to be beaten to death with clubs and have his head cut off. He suffered martyrdom on the 14th day of February, 269 AD, the same day that had been devoted to love lotteries. Legend also says that St. Valentine left a farewell note for the jailer's daughter who had become his friend and signed it, "From your Valentine." Gradually, February 14th became the date for exchanging love messages, and St. Valentine became the patron saint of lovers. The date was marked by sending poems and simple gifts such as flowers. There was often a social gathering or a ball. Americans began to exchange handmade valentines in the early 1700s. The first mass-produced valentines in the United States were made around 1835 by a Mount Holyoke college student named Esther Howland. Her father, who owned a stationery store, imported valentines from England, but she wanted something more personal. She imported fancy paper and lace and employed assistants to help her in her enterprise. We currently celebrate Valentine's Day by honoring those we love with gifts, sentimental verses, and Valentine greeting cards. So that's a little bit of history behind St. Valentine's Day. Poor St. Valentine lost his head because of that, but nonetheless, we continue to celebrate on the 14th of February. A little exercise. Can you sum up your romantic life in just six words? And here are some six-word romantic ditties. Where he is, I am home. Pretty. Love, 8 pounds and 6 ounces. Another one, endurance is an expression of love. Everyone's crazy except you and me. This one I thought was kind of touching. May I have the last dance? Well, we have a fun show today and some very special guests, but I thought we'd start out by perhaps playing a little romantic music. And one of the most romantic songs by a person who's become a friend of ours, been on our show numerous times, such a gentleman, Herb Alpert, and his beautiful This Guy's in Love with You. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
You see this guy, this guy's in love with you. Yes, I'm in love. Who looks at you the way I do? When you smile, I can tell we know. How can I show you I'm glad I got to know you, 'cause I've heard some talk. They say you think I'm fine. Yes, I'm in love. And what I do to make you mine? Tell me now, is it so? Don't let me be the last to know. My hands are shaking.
And in honor of St. Valentine's Day, Herb Alpert, This Guy's in Love with You. We're back on The Kevin Moore Show. As the centerpiece of its 2018-2019 season, the Joffrey Ballet proudly announces the world premiere of Yuri Posikov's historic reimagining of Leo Tolstoy's classic novel, Anna Karenina, considered the greatest literature ever written. This majestic full-length work is presented in a first-time collaboration between the Joffrey Ballet and the renowned Australian Ballet to be performed in Chicago at the Auditorium Theatre Roosevelt University, 50 East Congress Parkway, and 10 performances only February 13th through the 24th. Created by visionary choreographer Yuri Posikov, this original production brings Leo Tolstoy's epic 19th-century story of passion and forbidden love to the life on stage. A ballet in two acts, Posikov's Anna Karenina centers on the tragic tale of a married aristocrat and her ongoing love triangle in Imperial Russia, the story that explores the complex politics of family, religion, morality, and gender. Anna Karenina is a deeply emotional story that speaks to our turbulent times and offers the ideal muse for Joffrey's tradition of powerful storytelling through dance, says Ashley Weider, the Mary B. Galvin Artistic Director of the Joffrey Ballet. Our collaboration with the Australian Ballet is momentous on so many levels, and Yuri Posikoff is a creative powerhouse at the height of his career. His fresh classical vocabulary will no doubt lead to a phenomenal retelling that honors the classic story while exploring the modern ballet idiom. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning star of stage, screen, and television, world-renowned dancer, having performed with the legendary Rudolf Nureyev and Margot Fonteyn, teacher, mentor, member of the Royal Ballet, former ballet master of the San Francisco Ballet, visionary in the world of dance, and the artistic director of the world-famous Joffrey Ballet, now presenting Yuri Posikoff's historic reimagining of the Leo Tolstoy classic Anna Karenina, February 13th through the 24th at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, Michigan at Congress. Our good pal, Mr. Ashley Witter. Ashley, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hi, Kevin. How are you today?
Good to talk to you, my pal. Hope you're feeling better.
Yes, I'm getting there.
Are you?
Yes.
It's a little process. Do your physical therapy.
I am. I'm being very diligent about doing my exercise every day. And I have to say that I have no pain from the surgery, which is fantastic.
Oh, absolutely.
And they really did. I take my hat off, and I have huge gratitude to Rush Medical Center and Midwest Orthopedics because they really did a brilliant job for me.
Well, I've been there, as you know, and I feel the same way.
Right.
But now you're back, and what a way to start and celebrate with the great Tolstoy. What a book this is, of course, one of the greatest novels of all time, and long and intricate, but magnificent. And now we have Posikoff's reimagining,
yeah,
Anna Karenina.
Yeah, it's been fantastic to be in the studio with Yuri. You know, I think that for many Russians, if not all Russians, I think that, you know, when they growing up and having such great literature, you know, you learn, you read all of those great novels, and I think that, you know, like 7 years ago when I asked Yuri about doing Anna Karenina, I think that it's something that was always in his mind, and it's a story that I've always loved, and I think that in his hands, he has given us a really, really beautiful, beautiful work. And I have to say, Kevin, too, that we commissioned a score, and so it is completely new music written for the work, mm-hmm, by a young, very brilliant Russian composer called Ilya Domunsky. And it would be hard to say enough good things about him, but he is kind of like the living day Prokofiev, Rachmaninoff, Tchaikovsky.
Mm-hmm.
He's given us a beautiful and brilliant score.
That's high praise. That's high praise.
It really is something. It's I think none of us can wait to hear it fully realized by the Chicago Philharmonic, because we've been using piano score.
You know, in our world of speed and high powered movement and so forth, people don't realize. I think maybe people have the impression that you're sitting down at the Gauge in the spring sometime and say, you know, we're going to put it on these three or four ballets and it's going to be a great hit, and here we are. But they don't realize that 7 years ago you started this.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I think it's like anything. You put the idea forward and then you kind of see where it goes and if it has legs. And particularly with Anna Karenina, knowing that I wanted Yuri to choreograph it, you know, Yuri, growing up in Russia, was very familiar with the version that Shedrin had composed. Shedrin composed a score of Anna Karenina for Maya Plesetskaya.
Mm-hmm.
And so I listened to it again, and for me it just seemed that it was very much of a time, of a Soviet kind of era. And I wanted something really fresh. And so, you know, Yuri thought about it some more and came back with Scriabin, and thought that maybe Scriabin piano and orchestra could work really well, which I was very open to.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that in the interim, Yuri was working at the Bolshoi on a new work called A Hero of Our Time, which is a very well-known tale in Russia. And he worked with Ilya Demunsky, and they got on incredibly well. And so what's wonderful is that this Anna Karenina is now the fourth collaboration that they've done together. Mm. And so it's obviously a very winning duo.
Of course, Yuri started out at the Moscow Ballet School, the Bolshoi Ballet, the Royal Danish Ballet, and then you met him when you were both at the San Francisco Ballet.
I did. Yuri came to San Francisco. We were both principal dancers, and we shared a dressing room for quite a few years together. So we would always talk about, you know, what were our ideas and dreams when our bodies were finished, giving out on the stage. And so I think it's kind of amazing that, we've both taken different journeys. Yuri has always loved choreographing. I've always loved teaching and directing. And so here we are, many years later, about to premiere this extraordinary work. I have to say, I'm so thrilled and I'm so moved by the work.
It's a great big world, but a very small loop. There's a nice article in the Tribune by Lauren Warnicki, and I think was interesting. We're talking about the evolution, about how you started with this idea, which everything starts with an idea, germinates, that you dream it, you decide it, and then you finally do it. But Lauren wrote an article about the evolution of the story ballets over the last few years, which I've enjoyed immensely, as we've talked about, because we've been on the show chatting about it. Stanton Welch's La Bayadere, and then Lubavitch's Othello, and then we went to Swan Lake by Christopher Wheeldon, Christopher Pastore's Romeo and Juliet, Ashton's Cinderella and Giselle, Wheeldon's Nutcracker again, and now we have another story, this beautiful story about Anna Karenina. It's a tragedy because the story itself doesn't end up as one would hope, but it is inevitably what happens.
Right, but I think that within the book of Anna Karenina, there are these kind of contrasting relationships, and so, I think that when Yuri wanted to first lay out what the libretto for the ballet would look like, he worked with a young theater director in Moscow, and I think that how they distilled those 800 plus pages down to, a really readable, doable, production within a two-hour time frame. And I think that what comes across very clearly in this rendition is that, obviously Anna, she oversteps the boundaries of her marriage through the passion of Vronsky. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, you have Levin and Kitty who kind of finally come together, and they so honor the line, they respect the line that brings them happiness and a family and a really good life. And so I think that you have the tragedy of Anna, and you have, what happens in our humanity and how we learn from that, and how we learn to honor each other, and through that we can find happiness. And I think that the ballet ends on such a poignantly beautiful note. So I think there's, after her suicide, mm-hmm. which it's so tragic,
yeah.
there is this resolve about us, about the people that we are and how we behave and how we love and live.
I've always been fascinated, Ashley, with that time of Russian imperialism, about the czars, the czarinas, the Romanov dynasty and so forth. And this is right in that era. And it's a time of flux, much like we experienced in the United States years after. Economic and gender disparities, religion, free will, and social mores, which Anna Karenina, of course, experiences in her life, in her relationship with Vronsky. Family is very important. And I think that's reflective of who and what Leo Tolstoy was.
Exactly. Absolutely. I think that, family is super important to all of us. And how we honor that and how we respect our families and, if we do, we have a way of continuing to grow together and move forward. But if we overstep the line, the cause and the harm and the damage that it creates can be lasting, everlasting. So I think that there are wonderful moral lessons that we can learn from I think all, you know, I think the reason that narrative works are so popular with people is because it's another mirror on our humanity.
And there's a little backstory here with Isabel Gianni about her relationship with Posokoff when she was a little girl watching him perform.
Right, because Victoria grew up in Tbilisi, Georgia, and so she took ballet there. And they have a very beautiful theater there, and the Bolshoi Ballet would go and perform there. And Victoria would wait to get his autograph. And so as a little girl, she really knew Yuri. He was such a beautiful dancer. And so then when I took over the Joffrey in 2007 and I invited Yuri to come and do a work, I think it was just such a magical moment for her that this person that she'd idolized was walking in the door to create a ballet for her.
That's something, huh?
You know, and I think that, you know, over the years we've done quite a few of Yuri's work, but to have a role like Anna Karenina created on you, I think for a great artist, this is a necessity.
I think that's what has made the Joffrey so vibrant and contemporary. And you've done this so well. You introduced great works of art, great works of ballet, but also great new and upcoming ballet talent to the Joffrey, Wieldon, Posokoff, and I'm sure there's a list of others you could enumerate here. And it's kept it vibrant. It's kept it contemporary from the standpoint of people still, it's something new. And I think that's something that we owe you a thanks for.
Well, it's such a pleasure, and I think of, you know, how the journey that we've taken at the Joffrey, and I so love and admire and respect the company, because it is looking at them and working with them that allows me to say, we should do this or we should create this, and I want to invite this person to come and work with us, and I do think that, you know, we've just announced our season next year, and I think that we're opening our season with Jane Eyre, which has been choreographed by Kathy Marsden. And I think it's another example of, you know, there's so much talent in the company, and it goes beyond being a great dancer, but they're also great actors, and they're also really beautiful people, and they believe in their art form, and they invest as much as I do, and I think that that's why it works.
Well, with a great leader, it's easy to do that, very frankly, and it's something we're looking forward to. I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here, but, yeah, the 64th season next year, 2019-2020, Jane Eyre in collaboration with the American Ballet Theatre. That's exciting.
Yeah, it's really good, and, you know, Kevin, I think that there's been a kind of seismic shift in how ballet companies and arts organizations in general function. I think we're much more collaborative than directors used to be. I think people thought, well, if they had this ballet, nobody else should do this ballet. But I think that we've realized that working together and using our resources is a way that we can continue to provide the highest level of artistic excellence within a budget. And I think that that is key here. So with Anna Karenina, as a co-commission with the Australian Ballet, has been a win-win for both of us.
And I think that based on that, you said the Australian Ballet, it's going to be performed in Australia also, right?
Yeah, so we open it on the 13th of February of this year, and then next year, I think in April, May, it will premiere in Sydney, Australia. So kind of wonderful that I danced with the Australian Ballet many, many years ago, and my good friend David McAllister, who is the artistic director there, also has admired Yuri Posokoff's choreography. And so when we were getting into Anna Karenina and I called David and said, what did he think? You know, would they be a partner? they jumped at it, which is fantastic.
Sure.
You know, it's really made building this beautiful production, you know, a 50-50 split between the two organizations.
How do you make these decisions on what you want to put on, Ashley? Is this done by yourself individually, or do you have a couple people that sit down with you and you get input from everybody and then kind of weigh what's possible and the economics of it and the possibilities of it?
Well, you know, I'm always thinking. So, like, every minute of my days, I have to say I'm probably consumed by my art form and by the company. You know, where do we want to be? Where do we want to go? What should we be dancing? What are the challenges, both for the company and our audiences? And I think that, you know, there's a certain kind of intuition about what is going to work. I would say that a really good example, Kevin, would be when I approached Christopher Wheeldon about the Nutcracker and about setting it in the World's Fair, mm-hmm. because I think that, you know, I kind of said it in a very simple way, and I think Chris originally thought, okay, I hear the idea. And then when we sent him a lot of books about the World's Fair and what happened at the World's Fair, then it suddenly clicked for him why it was a good idea. So I think it's the same with doing anything. You know, we did such a beautiful version of Giselle.
Oh, that was fun. That was great.
Last season, and I I'd wanted to bring Giselle back, but I really wanted to do a little bit more research and go back to what was the real essence of Giselle. It's like one of the greatest romantic ballets, and so I think that at the Joffrey now we have like the romantic ballets, which is Giselle. Hopefully we're going to do La Sylphide. Then you've got the classical ballets, of which La Bayadère was really kind of the forerunner. And out of all of those, we have never done a production of Sleeping Beauty. Mm-hmm. I've wanted to do a production of Sleeping Beauty for a long time. So that is definitely in the works.
I've always enjoyed Coppelia.
Yeah, I love Coppelia too. And actually, you know, I look around because I think, okay, should we just do a brand new production, which is quite expensive, or is there a production in the world that really speaks to me? And there is an amazing production that is actually owned by the Australian Ballet.
Oh, really?
Designed by, I think it's a Danish designer, and it is magical.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, these are all on the cards.
And, you know, at one time, the ballet season would be X amount of months from approximately September to March, maybe April. Now the ballet season is year-round, especially with your outreach and your traveling.
Right. I think that, you know, our academy is excelling, and we have a trainee and studio company within the academy, and they've had a lot of opportunities. They actually just performed at Wheaton College mm-hmm. with the Camerata Orchestra. So that was a great experience. And then in our community engagement programs, we have so many programs going throughout Chicagoland, as well as downtown at the Joffrey Tower. So I think that, you know, for us, dance is a daily. And I think that we're always looking for partners. We're looking for opportunities to collaborate within the city, because Chicago has an enormous treasure trove of incredible artistic talent in many, many ways.
We're very fortunate along those lines, aren't we? Yes,
we really are. I mean, there's so much good theater and good music, and it just is endless. Good art. I mean, it's such an inspirational city.
It's certainly great ballet because of Ashley Weider and the Joffrey Ballet.
You're very kind.
Classically trained to the highest standards, the Joffrey Ballet expresses a unique, inclusive perspective on dance, proudly reflecting the diversity of America with its company, audiences, and repertoire, which includes major story ballets, reconstructions of masterpieces, and contemporary works. The company's commitment to accessibility is met through an extensive touring schedule, an innovative and highly effective education program, including the much-lauded Academy of Dance, official school of the Joffrey Ballet, community engagement programs, and collaborations with myriad other visual and performing arts organizations. founded by visionary teacher Robert Joffrey in 1956, guided by celebrated choreographer Gerald Arpino from 1988 until 2007, the Joffrey Ballet continues to thrive under the Mary B. Galvin Artistic Director Ashley Weider and President and CEO Greg Cameron. As the centerpiece of its 2018-2019 season, the Joffrey Ballet proudly announces the world premiere of Yuri Posokov's historic reimagining of Leo Tolstoy's classic novel Anna Karenina, considered the greatest literature ever written. This majestic full-length work is presented in a first-time collaboration between the Joffrey Ballet and the renowned Australian Ballet to be performed in Chicago at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, 50 East Congress Parkway, in 10 performances only, February 13th through the 24th. And on the line with us right now is our dear friend Ashley Weider. Ashley, maybe a phone number or website if people would like to get some tickets for Anna Karenina?
You can definitely go to joffrey.org, and you can access all the performances and the casting of the performances and tickets there as well. And then you can also do it through our box office. So there are many ways. And I really would say to everyone, you know, come and experience something that is really, it's really beautiful and it's really magical. And I have to say, Kevin, that, you know, with Yuri and Ilya Domunsky, the composer, Tom Pye, who is a truly man of the theater, he is the scenic and costume designer, along with David Finn and a very brilliant projection artist, a man called Finn Ross. So I think that, you know, they have all seen what Yuri has created, and now it's their turn to go into the theater and start creating with lighting, projections, and everything else. So the rest of this week we are in stressful mode because there is never enough time in the theater, and we have so much to get done. But I can assure you that come next Wednesday, the opening of Anna Karenina will happen.
We are looking forward to it. I'm very much looking forward, as is Kimberly. And what is that saying? A key to a vital life is possessing an eagerness to learn and a willingness to change, reflective certainly of what you're doing at the Joffrey. And thank you for doing it and continuing to do it. And we're looking forward to next week, my pal.
Okay, fantastic, Kevin. And I have to say, I feel like the luckiest man to be given the responsibility of running this company. And what I love now is that I feel that Joffrey is completely Chicago's own company, and I think that Chicagoans have embraced the Joffrey in such a beautiful way.
One of Chicago's great treasures, Ashley, as you were.
Thank you.
Thank you, my pal. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care, Kevin.
Okay, my pal.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Ashley Weider, the artistic director. What a fine gentleman. Think the world of him. Of the Joffrey Ballet, now presenting Yuri Posokov's historic reimagining of the Leo Tolstoy classic Anna Karenina, February 13th through the 24th at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, Michigan at Congress. For information, 312-386-8905. In honor of Kathy Taylor, I want to mention Chicago Theater Week, February 7th through the 17th, to kick off the Year of Chicago Theater. Tickets for Chicago Theater Week, an annual celebration of the rich tradition of theater going in Chicago, during which visitors and residents can access value-priced tickets, all priced at $30, $15, or less, at chicagotheaterweek.com. It will take place February 7th through the 17th. From joy to heartache and every feeling in between, Chicago Theater tells stories that evoke big emotions, stories that take risks, inspire awe, ask tough questions, and dare audience to do the same. From musicals to plays to comedy, theater is for everyone in Chicago. Chicago Theater Week is a celebration of the stories we share and will kick off 2019 as the Year of Chicago Theater, a first-of-its-kind initiative designated by Mayor Rahm Emanuel. Chicago Theater Week, spanning a week and two full weekends, is heading into its seventh year. As a program of the League of Chicago Theaters, headed by our good friend Deb Clapp, the executive director of the League of Chicago Theaters, in partnership with Choose Chicago, more than 100 theater productions will participate in neighborhoods throughout the city and suburbs like Chicago Children's Theater, Broadway in Chicago, Northlight Theater, Looking Glass Theater, Victory Gardens, and Writers Theater. Chicago Theater Week is presented by the League of Chicago Theaters. And to access the information, again, chicagotheaterweek.com. So happy to do that for Kathy Taylor, one of the great publicists in the city of Chicago. The history of cheese fondue dates back to the sheep and goat herders of the 1500s. While moving their flocks across the mountains valleys of Switzerland, they would carry cheese, bread, and wine. Over time, the shepherds learned to melt the cheese into the wine and dip their breads into the cheese, hence creating cheese fondue. Gaia's Cafe to roll out the romance for a 9-day Valentine's Festival. Chicago's most romantic restaurant sets hearts on fire with specials everyone will love, plus a special evening dedicated to celebrating marriage. Be mine, Valentine. Gaia's Cafe, the renowned restaurant of romance, located at 340 West Armitage, is planning the most romantic Valentine's celebration in its 54-year history. From Saturday, February 9th through Sunday, February 17th, Gaia's Cafe will be elegantly decorated for the love-filled holiday and will feature a selection of rosé sparkling wines and champagnes, delicious fondue cuisine perfectly complemented with entertainment throughout the evening from live flamenco and classical guitarists. The Valentine's Festival will also play host to the ever-popular Celebration of Marriage Night, where couples receive an added discount based on the years they've been married. Our goal at Gaia's Cafe is to create the perfect Valentine's experience for our guests that spans past the actual day, says Jeff Lawler, Gaia's proprietor. We will combine the necessary ingredients of an intimate atmosphere, fine champagnes, lavish decorations, live music, flower arrangements by Dilly Lily, couples massage packages at Massage House, and delicious fondues into the perfect recipe for romance. And no one better to tell us about what's in store at Gaia's Cafe than the second most romantic man in Chicago, who's also an award-winning leader in the hospitality industry, one of Chicago's great restaurateurs, the owner and general manager of Chicago's most romantic dining destination, now presenting in his Restaurant of Romance, Valentine's Day 2019 at Gaia's Cafe, 340 West Armitage, from Saturday, February 9th through Sunday, February 17th, Gaia's annual festival, Valentine's Day celebration. Our good pal, Mr. Jeff Lawler, how you doing, buddy?
Kevin, great. We are just doing great here, and thank you for kicking off another Valentine's season at Gaia's.
It is a tradition I wouldn't miss.
It's not Valentine's without speaking with you.
Thank you. That's right, and you have some special surprise every year. Now, you know what's funny, though? We have to share this. When we started out with the marriage celebration, it was, what was it, 50% off?
It was 2% off every year you were married. And it's still a very popular event, but just like last year, we had 12 couples married over 50 years in here. Okay? So now they enjoy the nice 50% off or the 52% off off their bill. So,
well, nowadays, if we're living longer, you're going to be paying people to come over to
gladly. Anything to celebrate marriage. I mean, being the new kid on the block.
There you go. That's right.
We got married this year, Dylan and I did, in Wyoming. And so I'm a new kid at this married thing, but I'm liking it so far.
God bless you. I hope you make 50, buddy.
I hope I do, too.
And this year is going to be great, better than ever. 54. Jeez, I can't remember that long ago, 54 years.
Isn't that special? Wow. I mean, 54 years at Gaia's, and still the couples keep coming in to celebrate their anniversaries, birthdays, of course, engagements. Couples are still coming in 2 to 3 times a week to get engaged here. I've had people meet here from Wisconsin. A couple came in. One person came from Wisconsin. One person came from Washington, D.C., and he surprised her in Chicago to propose to her, and he just found us online and said, yep, this is a place to get engaged, and we put together a wonderful engagement celebration for the couple and their family. So,
Jeff, tell me what other restaurant, because I don't know of any offhand, what other restaurant has been around this long? The longevity, it's a success that you've had.
Italian Village quickly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they've been around for, I think, 85 years.
Okay.
There's many wonderful ones. Twin Anchors is one that's just down the street, known for their wonderful ribs. But when it comes to fondue dining, we're it, and the romance factor.
Absolutely. Nothing like it. And nothing like it in the entire United States and kudos to you for that, and certainly John for starting this all out many years ago.
Exactly. John and I were just on the phone the other day talking about Valentine's. It's still very much on his mind, even though, I mean, he's not been part of Gay House for a number of years now. He's just, it's still in his blood. Hey, Jeff, it's Valentine's time. It's February. It's Valentine's. What's happening? Okay, so.
And it's true because many years ago, and I remember being part of the wine club. This goes back a long time.
Yeah.
But he was one of the first that started the wine bar concept, too.
He did. We were the first wine bar in 1965 in Old Town. And then when he started the Wine of the Month Club, that was the first in the United States. And he actually grew that to feature wines in 38 states and over serving over like 75,000 people were getting wine on a monthly basis from A Taste of California.
We're talking about John Davis, of course, the man who started Gay House many years ago.
Yes, yes. So we're looking forward to another 9-day celebration.
Yeah, tell us what we're going to have this year.
Well, we decorate this Saturday. We actually decorate a place. And then reservations are already packed, but we still have room for last-minute callers. We'll find room for you to enjoy Gay House's Valentine during those 9 days, between the 9th and the 17th. Monday, the 11th, is the celebration of marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So that is really a very special day, and take pictures of couples that have got married, and they'll have a nice little keepsake from that day. And then we have a couple of 12th and the 13th, where it's nice, easy, relaxing Valentine's filled days. Then it's the Super Bowl on the 14th. We've had to split it up to multiple seatings throughout the day, where it's 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 6:30, 7:30, 9 o'clock, and even 10 o'clock.
Wow. Okay.
So, yeah, and each seating, the couples will come in and enjoy a glass of Charles Heitzig Rosé Champagne. They'll enjoy the complete fondue dining experience at a nice, leisurely, romantic pace. And then they will leave here with a little Valentine's keepsake for each of them.
And what's nice, too, and some people can't make that day or can't make the day after, but you have it from weekend to weekend. That's a great idea, Jeff.
That's how we do it, yeah. So that, I mean, we can only get so many people in the place on the 14th, so let's celebrate for a number of days. So, yeah.
A lot of fun, always a lot of fun, and a lot of fun for you now, being the newlywed.
It is a lot of fun for me. It is. I mean, being a gentleman like John Davis. Now, John Davis didn't marry until he was 56. I didn't marry until I was 56.
Mm-hmm.
And running this restaurant of romance and taking our time about finding Miss Wright, and to have faith in love and the magic of Gay House that it would happen. And eventually it happened for both of us.
Sure.
And we're both blessed.
Sure,
so.
Sure. It's not easy, I think, living the life of a successful restaurateur, because you have to redefine yourself on a regular basis. There are so many people out there with other restaurants. Most of them come and go within the first year or two. And here you are thriving greater than ever after all these years. But it's a tough life, too.
You know, it's a full life. Mm-hmm. I can't say that it's a tough life. It's a busy life.
Yeah.
It's a fun life. It's been a way of life. I've been in the business since I was 17. I committed my life to it when I was 21 years old, and I've never looked back. It's just a way of life. Now, when Darla came from Ohio to be here in Chicago with me, she got the true taste of a Chicago restaurateur and a community guy. Gay House believes in giving back to the community, so Gay House is very involved in the community. And he goes, oh my God, you just keep going. There is no rest. But it's fun.
Sure.
It is fun just being part of a special restaurant and a special community and having fun every day.
And I think that dignity is an important word. And I think that's what you have and John has, and what people appreciate when they come to a place like Gay House. Food is great. Of course the food is wonderful. But also the people that work with you, your team, make people welcome. Make people feel like, this is true. I want to come back again and again and again.
We keep seeing that in reviews. And Gay House is blessed to have such a longevity staff. Our average employee has been here for about 17 years.
Wow. Okay.
We have a couple employees that are 37 years they've been here.
Wow.
Okay, a small handful that have been over 30, and then a few newcomers. But we're a family here, and we all take our jobs and what we do very serious, and we want to create special nights, special experiences for guests that come in here, whether it is a night of romance, whether it's friends just getting together, like on the deep freeze night
we had
on Wednesday.
Really, yeah.
I was here. We ended up doing 35 people.
Well,
I thought about closing, but there was a large amount of people that said, no, don't. We're coming in for sure. And they came in, and it was just fun to see. We had about 7 tables that were just all girls, just talking, mm-hmm. kicking back and relaxing. We had a business meeting here, and it was fun. It was even on the deepest, coldest night in years, many years.
Sure.
People had a nice, rich, warm night here. So.
And you've seen, since when you started, you've seen the regentrification of this neighborhood in Armitage just blossomed into something you couldn't imagine what it is right now.
Yeah, no one would have imagined this. I mean, I remember John telling me that when he moved Gayhouse to this location in 1971, he knew that the two contractors that built two very large condo buildings at the corner of Clark and Armitage would not let the community or the neighborhood go down. So it was only going to go up. So that's why John felt comfortable moving. But no one would go near Halsted and Armitage. Now, you can't touch Halsted and Armitage.
Right.
It's just so thriving and so exciting. And the real estate's very expensive, and the nightlife is fun, and the homes are incredible. Being part of the Lincoln Park Chamber of Commerce, too, I mean, they are a driving force in the community, not just for business, but for work, play, and business, that the vision that they have, the vision that DePaul University has, and the new construction that has gone up, it really is like, even as mature and special as Lincoln Park is, it's going under a major sort of renovation with Children's Memorial Hospital is gone,
sure,
and the big development we have in the heart of Lincoln Park. Then you have Lincoln Yards, it's just west of Lincoln Park, that's making, it's going to be just an incredible extension of Lincoln Park. So a lot of exciting things happening in the area.
Stay forever, my friend.
We hope to. Yeah. We hope to.
Known
but
for
yeah,
romance.
We're going to take Gayhouse to 75 years, and hopefully someone will buy it from me, and then that will probably be the last year we have our Valentine's conversation, and someone else will
Hope I'm around, buddy
you'll
boy.
You'll be around.
Known for romantic fondue dining, food one prepares and shares, and an extensive list of fine, moderately priced wines, Gayhouse Cafe features over 20 different types of fondue entrees, including cheese fondue and chocolate dessert fondue. An enchanting wine cellar atmosphere, private booths, and subdued lighting contribute to its intimate surroundings. Live flamenco and classical guitarists provide romantic accompaniment. Be mine, Valentine. Gayhouse Cafe, the renowned restaurant of romance located at 340 West Armitage, is planning the most romantic Valentine celebration in its 54-year history. From Saturday, February 9th through Sunday, February 17th, Gayhouse Cafe will be elegantly decorated for the love-filled holiday and will feature a selection of rosé, sparkling wines, and champagnes, delicious fondue cuisine perfectly complemented with entertainment throughout the evening from live flamenco and classical guitarists. And online with us right now is our dear, dear friend, Jeff Waller. Jeff, a phone number, website, if people would like to touch base?
Yes, gayhousecafe.com. It's GEJASCafe.com. And the number is 773-281-9101.
My pal, always a pleasure. God be with you and stay healthy, and always look forward to seeing you.
Ditto, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, my pal.
Happy Valentine's. Bye-bye.
Jeff Waller, the owner and proprietor of Gayhouse Cafe, one of the great restaurateurs in Chicago, and just a fine gentleman. We always have such fun talking and celebrating Valentine's Day every year. Valentine's Day 2019, Gay Ass Cafe, 340 West Armitage, Saturday, February 9th through Sunday, February 17th. For information, 773-281-9101. I always enjoy reading this from Richard Roper, his essay on sexism, injustice, pain. It's all in the Valentine monologues. Who's responsible for Valentine's Day? Richard writes, becoming a major commercial and romantic event, featuring cards and flowers and dinner reservations and the giving of the bling. Who's behind the dubious trend of some houses and businesses actually displaying elaborate Valentine's Day decorations in their windows and on their doors for weeks before the big day? Who's the driving force behind Valentine's Day as a marketing phenomenon, a huge date night for restaurants and theaters, an advertising gimmick, a near-official American holiday? Nope. We can't blame it on the greeting card companies or the chocolate manufacturers or the jewelers or even those mysterious people in Vermont who have devoted their life to making cutesy-themed teddy bears. Sure, the romantic product industries have a vested interest in Valentine's Day, and they've aggressively contributed to its frightening growth, but it's not corporate America that should be held responsible for making Valentine's Day a holiday. It's women. Without women, Valentine's Day would die a quick death. Without the input of women, February 14th would be just another cold day. A generalization? You betcha. But it's an accurate one. I wish we could test it right now. I wish we could ask the men of this country just one question. Should Valentine's Day exist? What do you think the results would be? How many men would actually vote to keep Valentine's Day on the calendar? Zero. Not even that guy in Will and Grace. Valentine's Day exists because women want it to exist. We can talk all we want about men and women being equal and wanting the same things, but the truth is that most women are thrilled about the existence of Valentine's Day, and most, if not all, men would rather catch a head cold than observe the rituals of Valentine's Day. Of course, you could take a stand. You could tell your honey that you don't believe in Valentine's Day, and you're not going to be co-opted by a commercialized holiday. If you want to demonstrate your love, you don't need Hallmark to do your talking for you. You're a rebel, an individualist, a man's man. You're not going to send flowers or take her out to dinner or buy her treats just because the advertising agencies and the fluffy articles in the newspaper say you should. One might think a woman would appreciate a man who thinks for himself like that. And one would be wrong. The man who tells a woman he doesn't celebrate or believe in Valentine's Day is not rewarded or applauded. He is branded as a terminal cheapskate and a thoughtless oaf. Even if the woman in his life smiles sweetly and says, "That's all right, honey, I don't care about Valentine's Day," instead she's thinking, "You stupid jerk, how am I supposed to go to work and act happy when all the women around me are getting flowers and sappy phone calls? You jerk." The only way this Valentine's Day madness could be reined in would be if millions of women of all ages decided to stop it. If women led the movement to simplify and scale back Valentine's Day, to make it less of an event, well, only they have that power. Men, imagine if the woman in your life came to you this morning and said, honey, please don't plan anything special for Valentine's Day this year. In fact, I insist that we don't do anything. If you want to take me to dinner or send me flowers or tell me how much you love me, do it when you sincerely want to do it, not when the calendar says you're supposed to do so. That's not love. That's cultural peer pressure. Until the woman lets the man off the hook for Valentine's Day, the man is on the hook for Valentine's Day. It's their holiday, and remember, and you better remember, we're just slaves to it. Richard Roper, sexism, injustice, pain, it's all in the Valentine monologues. For Valentine's Day, a little romantic song by Henry Mancini. It's easy to say, and we'll be back on the Kevin Moore Show. Thank you. Henry Mancini, It's Easy to Say from the movie 10. We're back on the Kevin Moore Show. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. I'd like to especially thank our guest, Ashley Weider, the artistic director of the world-famous Joffrey Ballet, now presenting Yuri Posokov's historic reimagining of the Leo Tolstoy classic Anna Karenina, February 13th through the 24th at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, Michigan at Congress. For information, 312-386-8905. And our good pal, Jeff Lawler, the owner and proprietor of Chicago's most romantic dining destination, Gaia's Cafe, celebrating Valentine's Day 2019 from Saturday, February 9th through Sunday, February 17th. To enjoy his hospitality, 773-281-9101. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought every day at least to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today, we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Happy Valentine's Day, everyone.
And tell me how, year after year, you're sure your heart will fall apart each time you hear her name. I know the way I feel for you. It's now or never. The more I love, the more that I'm afraid. In your eyes I may not see forever. Forever. If we can be the best of lovers, yet be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows, any luck then I suppose. The music, the music. Pero ella